My name is Michelle Gallia-Holland. I live in Chicago, and I work for a foundation called the Polk Brothers Foundation that is based in Chicago. Yes. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Polk, so just to set the scene and for you to understand how and why we do grant making in the way that we do. I would say that some of the colleagues, I would say everyone, and let me know if you disagree with this, that has presented before me are part of the proactive grant making cohort. And at Polk Brothers Foundation, we are very responsive. Our board likes to fund direct services, and they like to fund organizations for a long time. And so when it comes to doing new and exciting things, we're not always necessarily leading the pack or creating new initiatives, but we're mostly trying to understand how we can keep supporting our grantees through some of the changes that are happening in their external environment. So one of the my favorite things about working at Polk Brothers Foundation and living in Chicago is that when I mention that I work at Polk Brothers, someone will always say, "Oh, that's where my grandmother got our couch," or "That's where we got our first TV," or "That's where we got our first iron." I mean, it's everywhere, and everything from a chair, a couch. They used to give out these Santas over Christmas as a promotional tool. And the Polk Brothers Foundation were known for many things, some of which you may not think have anything to do with your life, but I am about to prove you wrong. The stores were established in 1935. Polk Brothers Appliance and Furniture Store was the first in the nation to be given TVs, not to be given, but to be commissioned to sell TVs and microwaves, color TVs and microwaves. So you think about that and whether or not Polk Brothers touched your life. And if that didn't touch your life in any way, Polk Brothers stores were actually the pioneers in the discounted price that you see in stores. So whereas before, you would go to a store and you would buy what you needed to buy at the manufacturer price. Isn't that crazy? That used to happen. Polk Brothers were really about pushing a bargain and making sure that, and they decided that the way they were going to make a profit is making sure that the everyday man can afford the products that are part of the American dream. And so they would push really hard to market and to discount and make their profit by moving more products in their stores. And one of the things that was also unique about the Polk Brothers stores is that they were actually in communities where some of the other stores were in the downtown area. And so they prided themselves a lot in being close to the community, and because they profited so much from community members coming to buy their products, they established a while back that they wanted to figure out how to give back to communities. And so a foundation was a huge part of what the main employees were expected to give back to, if not to donate to neighborhood groups or some of the neighbors that were coming to shop at their stores. The bottom picture is a photo of the Polk Brothers store burning in mostly the inventory store burning in 1987. No one set them on fire. It was an accident. But at that point, they decided that they were trying to decide what direction they were going to take their store, and they decided that they were going to liquidate everything and roll all those funds into the Polk Brothers Foundation. And that is the legacy that they left behind and continue to contribute to Chicago. And so through these program areas, Polk Brothers Foundation gives to about 400 organizations in Chicago. We only fund in Chicago, and we give between $20 to $22 million a year. We, as you can see, span across several issues, and this is how much we give to each of those issues by supporting different nonprofits in their work that they do in the communities last year. I wanted to start at this point because I think it kind of really makes it very clear, and I'm going to skip this for now, kind of brings into focus the idea of integrating health and healthcare. And as a responsive grant maker and not necessarily being able to do amazing initiatives like some of the ones that we've heard before, a lot of the conversations that we were having at the foundation when the Affordable Care Act came around, for example, was how can we make sure that we stay true to our mission, stay true to how we do our business, but also stay true to some of the changes that a lot of the nonprofits that we were supporting were having to adapt to in order to evolve. And this graph, I'm sure all of you have seen this before, kind of talks about the core determinants of health. We've also seen it in this way. And when you look at our grant making, as you can see, I like to say, our foundation is a public health foundation. I'm still convincing my VP that who believes that because we fund a lot of education that we're actually an education foundation. So I can say that you all agreed with me, and hopefully we'll change that. But I think this helps us think about kind of what's happening at a macro level at the foundation. Though I can't say everyone says that this is happening intentionally, one thing that's been a paradigm shift over the past couple of years is really understanding how all our different grant making have health components to them, even though they're an education program or even though they're a housing program. We have a brand new program area called Safe Communities, where we're really looking to fund strong public safety focused programs and programs that are working with the justice involved population. And we understand one of the fundamental services that need to be provided to those populations are health services. And so on a macro level, I think a lot of my coworkers who are program area leaders in housing and homelessness, in workforce development, in a lot of different social services that we support in the city are beginning to fundamentally understand the role that healthcare and access to healthcare plays in making sure in the outcomes that they want to see their populations realize. On a micro level, as a responsive grant making, we have realized that we're not necessarily going to change our grant making in a fundamental way and shift how we're doing business, but listen to our grantees and understand what they need from us as a funder and whether or not that works for us. And so in that conversation, what we decided to do was make sure that our program areas aligned with best practices. And the Affordable Care Act is a lengthy document, but it has some very clear ideas and mandates about how federally qualified health centers, for example, are supposed to operate and what population health means for them. And we fund a lot of federally qualified health centers in the city to deliver both health promotion and other chronic management programs. A lot of programs that weren't traditionally very well reimbursed by health insurance and health FQHCs are now being asked to figure out how to integrate those programs that were independently supported for many reasons into their regular work. And so we took a look at our grant making and our components and our evaluation criteria to understand how the Affordable Care Act impacts that and what we need to change in our language to make sure that we reflect those changes and to reflect the new direction that the country was moving forward. And we also encourage our grantees through site visits and in conversations about our grant making to consider what the law means for them and to figure out how we, and say to them, we're not looking to abandon you or to say that if you're not doing this, we're not going to support you, but we are looking for you to do what is now being called a best practice, and we want to support you. We understand that that's a journey, and we want to support you through that. And I think that was relieving for a lot of them to hear, because it meant that they could take the time to adapt and do their work well. So supporting our grantees through their evolution, and then also, as I mentioned before, making sure that our grant making also reflects that evolution and that we are in line with what those changes mean. One explicit way that we definitely created space within our grant making to make sure that we do support those game changers that are either working with our grantees or working with larger systems to adapt some of these changes in health integration was to create a new program area within our health grant making. And we call that the Systems Improvement and Innovation program area. And through that program area, we're really looking to support people who are bringing stakeholders together in many of the ways that some of my colleagues here have talked about, to think about the changes that are ahead of us and how they can help either our grantees or other people or the field in general to move towards that direction. We're also looking to support organizations that are trying new ways to either integrate health with substance use programs or homelessness programs, and understanding that integrating health and healthcare into those spaces is important, because when you look at the populations that are very high need in our city, for example, there's a lot of overlaps in all of those populations. All in the Venn diagram middle, you find that you're looking and serving the same high risk need people all the time. And so how can we make sure that we're touching them and being coordinated and responsible about it? And so in this work, we're also looking to support coalition work, and we're also looking to support organizations that are collecting data in a meaningful way. And so in this small way, we've been able to carve carve out some space within our regular grant making, giving being a responsive grant maker, to say we're interested in supporting this work as well, and we give a green light to anyone that's looking to move forward. If you're not looking to move forward, we'll have a friendly conversation about why and why that's the case. And in a worst case scenario, that conversation can go in opposite direction, but I'm glad to say that our grantees are very, at least in Chicago, are very connected to where this field is going, and we are glad to be able to say that our board understands the importance of us supporting them through those changes. This is my information. If you have any questions, I try to be very short because All right. Have a good day. Oh, and I actually really wanted to have a sense of who's in the room. How many funders are in the room? And is it safe to assume that the rest of the folks here are either from hospitals or community-based organizations or academics? Okay, good to know. Thank you.
Well, we've really had some outstanding presentations and been able to see some very exciting models to advance the field that we're all working in forward. We purposefully, well, first of all, I would like to thank Brian and Claudia for the great work in setting this up. I think this is incredibly important and hopefully will be a legacy as we move forward on to next year and the years to follow. And I should say that it was meaningful, I think, to bring in three national philanthropic leadership organization and one excellent local organization, too, as we look at ways that we may be able to, in the big picture, even develop a net or some closer collaboration between our national leaders and many of the local philanthropic organizations as well, and in a way to be more collaborative and to advance the field. But what I'd like to do is, I know that you all already work a lot in that regard, is to start off with one question, and then we'll open it all up to you all, and that is, you know, you all have done great work, De Beaumont and Kresge and Robert Wood Johnson, in the development of the BUILD project. How do you all see more effective ways, or perhaps how can we advance the relationship between your organizations and local philanthropic groups in a meaningful way? Could I ask you that, Brian? And we'll just go down the table real quick.
So I'll give a tip of my hat to RWJ. With the Hub Impact, the Hub Impact project, what RWJ has been able to do with Pew is kind of create a railing on which other foundations are able to hang. And so they funded the infrastructure, and then other foundations came in and actually did grant making using that infrastructure. We just did that with our Big City Health Corps. So I think all of us hope that this is the first round of Build Health Challenge. And that, you know, pilot, we're able to work out a lot of the kinks, and so the next time we do this, if it all goes well and it's successful, that we would open this up to other local foundations to say, listen, I want to do a Build Health Challenge in my neighborhood or in my state, or I want to fund 3 in Missouri, or I want to fund 4 in Colorado. So I think in that way, this is going to be a change that's going to happen locally. And actually, in the Build Health Challenge now, there is an assessment for anyone who's interested in putting in local philanthropic dollars to match some of the stuff that the hospital is doing and be a part of that early on. So that's, I think that's how we're going to do it.
Jim, I know you addressed the question to Brian and me and Abby, but I'd also like Michelle's thoughts as well, which is from the other perspective from a local philanthropic perspective, what is the most effective way that national funders can meet you and your constituents on your terms and play an effective role? So I think sometimes that perspective gets lost. So. I would just echo Brian's enthusiasm for what we're doing collectively with the Build Health Challenge, particularly the learning opportunity that it presents to really stimulate and accelerate effective partnerships at the local level. I should just acknowledge, and maybe I'm the one who feels this way, I don't know if you ever feel this way, but With Ned, coming, so I worked most of my philanthropic career at a local foundation. You know, I've been with Crespi for a little bit over a year. And what I've observed is a lot of times with national funders, there's this balancing act that we don't always get right between funding sort of national field building, networking with very sophisticated organizations with the national level, while also supporting local innovation that has potential to sort of feed the innovation. And it's often easiest to default to supporting the national field building, right? Because that's the deal we see most often. It takes a lot more work to, say, get a sensitive feel for what's happening in Chicago or Cleveland or Memphis and what the opportunities are for philanthropic investment that can be I'm a passionate believer that if we only are supporting the national level work, we're really missing the boat. Right? This is one reason that we go to conferences like this. It's one reason why we travel so much. And if we need to get out in the field and be with our partners on the local level to really understand what's happening out there, what role philanthropic support can play in accelerating change, and what lessons can be learned that we want to see this to send us.
Thank you. So a couple, one, it's the perfect entree to say I am leaving the student session and so I can jump on a plane to go to Pittsburgh to meet with the Pennsylvania Health Funders Network, because for us and for the work that I do, I see state and local funders as being a critical partner. So at that foundation for the past 5 years, I've worked on our county health crisis and roadmap initiative, which is very much a local initiative. It takes the premise that there's an enormous amount of change that can be driven locally in communities. And to Chris's point, as a national funder, it creates an enormous amount of angst to think about how do we then support communities that we don't know. We don't know the politics, we don't know the players, we don't know what the lever points are. And so for us to really think about that type of change or driving that type of change, we need to partner with the community foundation and local state foundations, not because of the sustained investments, which they know what this looks like on the ground. And so I think for us, that's the question of what role can we play, because we fundamentally believe that change can happen at the local level, and we need to have that local level. What is the right way for us to engage? Both Ryan and Scott can have those. There are a couple of other models out there that we're paying attention to. One sort of a question that I'll leave with the group is New York State Police Foundation last year, in advance of GIH, pulled together a small group. We were a part of it, and we sort of like, well, let's just do it. We don't have everyone covered up. Let's start a conversation about a funders learning collaborative around building healthy communities. Knowing that there's just so many people that are in the space that are trying to understand what the levers are, how you think about social determinants, how you think about public education, how you think about policies. And I would think my sense is there's an enormous desire to think about how you align, national, state, community, and local foundations in that conversation. So that's a conversation we're a part of. I know that there are folks in the room that say, wow, that's a interest to us. We'd like to be a part of that conversation. There's a room for that. And we're trying to pay attention to exactly all of the engagement. So I would say, there's a desire.
Thank you. Please.
I think in Chicago, as a lot of my colleagues in the audience, it's a very robust community and very active community of foundations and grant makers, and particularly those that focus on health. And I think we come together on several occasions to think about, for example, the Affordable Care Act, what that meant for some of our grantees. And so there is, I think, a right opportunity there to latch on to a group of folks who are thinking in the same way as you all are. And I guess my recommendation or my feeling from just an experience of being a local funder is I think if we in the best cases, do have a good sense of what's happening locally. We could probably point national groups to particular partners if they're looking to do a certain type of work, and we can also play a facilitating role, I believe, in being able to bring those parties together. So there's lots of room for partnerships, and I definitely don't feel like there's too much tension between national funders and local funders.
Very good. Well, thank you all for that, and I'd like to, in the remaining time, open it up for questions from the audience. And yes, sir.
First of all, thank you for the state health ranking. I'm a private health department in a small county in western Washington State. We use the county health rankings to build a community health assessment and health process that we're now using to catalyze the very same kind of frame you're talking about here. But here's my question. Our funding comes for our health department, most of our community health comes from state and federal sources. So as we look at housing, for example, as we look at education, for example, and we look at our state legislature and our state government, as part of its current level budget, will put significant amount of its new dollars that it has available into paying for medical inflation for public employees and school teachers and to a lesser extent for Medicaid. At the very same time, they're facing the contempt of Supreme Court finding for failure to fund class size and teacher salaries in basic education. So we're talking about improving educational outcomes at a community level. We have a significant housing problem. There is a housing bureaucracy, state and federal, that gets funding cut repeatedly. Our community priority is to do more about substance abuse treatment. The medical system is cutting substance abuse treatment reimbursement as part of the grand scheme to transform medical care. And so subvert behavioral health under biomedical research and epidemiology, biomedical research kind of priority. So my question is, as you look at all of this really wonderful frame you're developing, are you looking at housing and education and community development systems that already exist in government and have been there for many years that are dying on the vine while we continue to feed medical inflation and make it impossible for those of us at the local level who get it and are trying to do it to have the resources that we need to move the dial?
Excellent question. Who would like to take that first?
Yes. Wow. There are about 12 important strands to that question. There's no way I could do justice to try to address all of them. I do think, one phrase that I've stolen from Brian, which I really like, is at one of our first meetings, Brian said something about, well, what we're talking about here is are we talking about silo expansion or silo dismantling? And I think when we talk about the real determinants of health, talk about safe, affordable housing, talk about educational attainment. In an ideal universe, there would not be this competition for resources where we continue to feed the beast of medical.